All right, we are going to be going through John chapter 9 this morning, looking through, walking through that narrative, that event that took place. And but as we start this class, there's something I want you to do while you're sitting there in your nice soft pews. I would like you to try as much as possible to put yourself in the place of the blind man. As much as possible, please be the blind man when you're kind of going through this narrative with me. Now, that does not mean close your eyes and lean back and say, I'm the blind man. Right? That is not what that means. But what this means, I know you're thinking it. What this means is when we're reading about this individual, try and put yourself in a situation where you feel the stones you're sitting on, you feel the cheap, dirty clothing you're wearing because nobody else will give you anything. You feel like you're less than everybody else that walks by because you're this man born blind. And somebody begins to talk to you. All right. So please, as much as possible, put yourself in that position as we go through what's happening with the man born blind. To really lay up what's going on in this scenario, I'd like us to look at the context of what took place just prior to John chapter 9. And in this context, we're looking at this day is a Sabbath day, and there's, according to Jewish law, there's things you should do and do not do on the Sabbath day. And so Jesus was teaching in the temple after being in Gethsemane all night. We see this in chapter 8, and he's teaching various people. He teaches about being his disciple, what it means to be his disciple indeed. And he begins to say some things that are not easy for those people who are there to hear. And so he's talking to those. So Jesus, verse 31 of chapter 8, so Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him. So he's teaching people who are listening to him at that time. But he even says some things to them that they're not really ready to hear in that moment. And also he's teaching about who he was. Who does he say he is in chapter 8, verse 41 and 42? Who does Jesus say he is? This is Bible class, you can talk. Who does he say he is? He's the Christ, right? In verses 41 and 42. He says who he is, where he's from. If God were your Father, you would have loved me, talking about who he is, for I proceed forth and have come from God. So there's this whole dialogue about who they worship and who they are children of, and Jesus is trying to tell them, you don't really quite get what's happening right now. They're not really quite putting two and two together with the relationship. What does Jesus say about them in verses 44 through 47? What does Jesus say about those who are listening? They were of Satan. Now, is that a nice thing to say to people? You don't put that on a greeting card, right? I mean, that's not how to win friends and influence people by calling them, oh, you're from Satan, right? But Jesus, if they're not from God, if they're not following him and listening to him because he is God, and we'll get to that in just a moment, if you're not following him, you're following who? Whom? Satan, right? We're not going to do church later this morning, but you understand where it's one or the other. It's one or the other in this scenario. You can't be just kind of middle of the road. So he's saying you're either with me or you're with Satan, and he's saying you're children of Satan. So that's you speak lies, you don't speak the truth. Not a nice thing to be saying about somebody. What do we learn about Abraham? This is actually an interesting kind of point to look at about Abraham in verse 56. Because they're saying what? What are they saying this whole time? We're children of Abraham. Abraham had many sons, and many sons had father Abraham, and I'm one of those. And so that's what they're going into here. And in this situation, they're saying, well, I'm from Abraham, right? Who died. And so what does he say about Abraham in verse 56? He saw this day and rejoiced. How did that happen? How did Abraham see this day? He said, your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it and was glad. How? Abraham's what?
His faith.
His faith? When God says, I am the God of the living, not of the dead. Who was on the Mount Transfiguration? Not Abraham, but who was on the Mount?
Moses and Elijah.
Moses and Elijah. Is it possible they're watching what's unfolding? He saw my day and was glad to see it. That's an interesting side note. That was free this morning, not really what we're focusing on. But it's interesting what we're looking at when he's teaching these people, is trying to get across to them who he is. And he says the ultimate thing here, I think we kind of went over this too quickly. Where is it? Looking back in, have you ever been in a situation where you're trying to teach somebody and they just don't get it? You draw pictures, you have PowerPoint slides, everything, and they just don't get it, right? Look back in chapter 8, at one point, he's saying to them, how is it that you do not understand? Because they ask him in verse 25, who are you? And he says, what I've been saying from the very beginning, I've been telling you this since I've been here, in verse 25. And then later on, verse 43, I'm sorry, it was later in the chapter than I thought. Verse 43, why do you not understand what I am saying? What parent has never said that? Why do you not understand what I am saying? Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? Is what Jesus is trying to say in that moment. And how did he, what he answered the question for him, right? It was rhetorical. He didn't really wait for them to respond. Why wouldn't they understand what he's saying? According to Jesus, you're not able to listen. You're not hearing what I'm saying. Have you ever talked to somebody and you're using English and you're using plain words? You know, we're keeping it two syllables, but they will not listen to what you're trying to say. Why won't they listen? What has blocked their ears from listening to the message that you're trying to say? They have their own ideas, right? There's a lot of things. They have their own ideas about what's going on. And in communication, when you guys have communication class one time, in speech, which you have to do in college at some point, they'll talk about noise in communication. There's noise. Noise is those things that would, anything that would disrupt the message being heard or understood properly. And in this case, it can be preconceived ideas. It can be their own anger towards an individual, that they're just shut down. They're not going to listen to anything that individual is saying. A lot of different reasons. But he's saying it's because you cannot hear. You are the father of the devil. And so they're not listening to what's going on. And so Jesus is speaking very plain to them. Now he begins to say what about himself? This is sort of the ultimate thing he says in John chapter 8, verse 58. What does he say? He's saying he is God. Now, when we read this, we don't understand the gravity of, but what does this tie Jesus back to? The burning bush. Who should I say to, I don't even know your name, God. When I go into Egypt, Moses saying, offering his excuses, I don't even know your name. Who am I going to say you are? I am sent you. The I am. And Jesus uses that here. The I am. This is who I am, right? Therefore, they did what? Oh, that's great. They began to listen to him, and everything was kosher. What did they begin to do at that point?
Pick up rocks
to stone him. So, in they were ready to stone somebody because they had just tried to stone the woman caught in adultery, and so they were ready to stone Jesus. And he does this active cloaking device kind of thing and gets out of there. And he kind of slips out of what's going on. It says Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. So that's the backdrop for what we're going to be looking into in John chapter 9. As Jesus is leaving the temple and he has his disciples with him, in John chapter 9, the disciples ask the question, right? So we go into what's going on with, they ask the question. And what is the question in verses 1 and 2?
Who sinned, this man or his parents?
This man or his parents. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Now, one of those is kind of weird, right? Why is one of those options a little bit off? This man, how did this man sin that he was born blind? You know, Jesus didn't even address that. And there is a situation where you're walking with Jesus, and Jesus is saying all these things and teaching all these people. And when you're a student, and this is your rabbi, you sometimes students want to ask questions to make themselves look like they know what they're talking about, right? Have you guys, I don't know, have you guys ever done that? Probably not. They're looking at me like, no, do we talk in class? No. You ask questions sometimes to say, well, you know, to show off to the other students, I know what I'm talking about. I was in preaching school. That happens a lot. You try to, you know a little bit, and you think you know a lot, and you try to ask questions, make yourself look good. It doesn't work. Just don't try that. It's usually best to keep your mouth shut before opening your mouth and removing all doubt about that. But in this situation, they asked the question, and how did he answer?
Neither.
They weren't expecting that one. What is Jesus trying to get them to understand? Or what they're asking the question from what construct? What are they operating under? What is their idea about sin? Or what is their idea about people who are suffering? You're suffering because
sin.
They're just like Job's quasi-friends, right? They're just like those guys that, well, you're only suffering because you have great sin in your life. Is that true? Is that absolutely true? Everybody who sins has great suffering. We know that's a lie, right? That is not. There's a lot of people who are sinning who are not suffering right now, yet. And so in this situation, that is not true. Ezekiel talks about the soul that sins, it will die. Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 20, if you're going to write out to the side of your Bible passage there. Also, 2 Corinthians 5:10, you will answer for the things that you've done. Not anybody else. You will answer for the things that you've done. So you want to write those out. Those are Bible passages teaching about this kind of against this inherent sin. But it says neither, nor his parents, but this is the works, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him. And so this is the reason when Jesus answers a question, might be displayed in him. He must work the works of the one who sent me. So we got to do this now while the time is. Do the work that God has sent him to do. Do that now. And so he talks about this working during the day as long as it is day. And then we begin to heal the blind man in verses 6 through 7. What does Jesus do here that's interesting in healing this blind man? Has he healed blind people before? Or does he heal blind people on a timeline? But he heals blind people. Is this his poultice always to do it this way? He's not had to touch people before to heal them or to even raise people from the dead. But it's interesting that what does he do in connection with this healing? He goes through a process, right? And this may have been as much for the man who was being healed than it was for those who were around him. Maybe the man who was being healed needed to feel like something was happening. Here's this guy who's sitting on the road. He's not heard about everything that's going on, maybe necessarily. He's not plugged in. He's ostracized. People throw coins at him every once in a while, and that's about it, his connection with people. And so maybe that's what that blind man needed in order to feel like something was being done. And he didn't just do that. He didn't just make clay, which later on the blind man said when he was telling the story, he said, well, he made clay. The blind man may not have known that it was spit, but he made clay. And then he tells them to go wash in the pool. What does John do in telling us about this pool? Go wash in the pool of Siloam. What does John do here about the name of that pool? He translates what that means. Now, John's writing to a Greek audience, all right? So he's giving the Greek audience this concept. Here's a loving God who heals this man, this poor beggar who is blind. And he sends him to the pool called Sent. I don't know if there's much to be said, a connection that's made there, but it's interesting that he would even translate that, the pool called sent. Maybe it was, I don't know, we're getting off there, but it's interesting that that is translated. So he goes away and washes and comes back what? Seeing. He can see. He's probably still counting his steps because he's never seen, right? He doesn't know how to get from place to place but by counting his steps. And so maybe he's still counting, maybe you're still counting your steps as you come back. I can see now. I can see. The man born blind can see. Did he act like Naaman? Remember Naaman, when he was told to go dip in the water? Go dip in the water seven times. And Naaman's like, no, I'm not going to do that. This guy didn't. He was, I'm going to do this. He was obedient in the instructions that were given him. And so he went and washed. Now, what do the neighbors begin to say? Is that really him? Is this the guy? It says he looks like him. And what does the text say that the blind man, that you as a blind man have to keep saying? It's me. It's really me. You have to keep saying this over and over. No, it's me, I promise. Like, ask me a question. Ask me a question only a blind man beggar would know. Ask me. One of those kind of things, right? You have to keep proving over and over again that this is, he is the one. He was the one that was born blind. And how do they know that your eyes are open? And he answered, the man who was called Jesus made clay, didn't know it was from spit, and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. And so I went away, washed, and received sight. And they said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. At this point, has he seen Jesus? I don't know. I don't know where he is. Then, something good happens, and something good happens, and the Pharisees have to step in, right? Jesus is doing something good again. All right, so the Pharisees step in and begin to question this guy. What are they questioning him? What do they open up with? How he received his sight. Now, what's interesting is how he gets a lot more... He abbreviates his story. So before he was telling the neighbors, this is what happened. He told me to go wash. And how brief is he in his description when he's talking to the Pharisees? He's just hitting the high points, right? The Pharisees, he said, he applied clay to my eyes, I washed, and I see. I'm not going into details what happened. He applied clay to my eyes, I washed, and I see. So he's being very brief with them. His interaction with Jesus. And we'll see why maybe later on. But it's interesting that he's this joy. The best day of your life. The best day of your life gets turned into a controversy. The happiest moment you have ever felt gets turned into a controversy now. And is mired in all this teaching and of such about what should be happening. And what do they begin to discuss about Jesus? They begin to discuss around themselves. Now, this is not the Sanhedrin. This is a group of kind of a lower group. Sanhedrin does not meet on the Sabbath. But they begin to discuss. And what are the two kind of points that we begin to see coming out about Christ? What do they begin to say? He's not a man from God because why?
He broke the Sabbath.
He healed on the Sabbath. He can't be a man from God. And the other one says what?
He has to be from God because he did a great thing.
But the signs. How do you negate the signs that he's doing? Right? So this becomes the controversy. He healed on the Sabbath. He's obviously not God. But the signs that he's done, what can you say about the signs? You can't teach against what he's doing. And so this man, the man born blind, becomes this lightning rod for this controversy because he is the very evidence of who Jesus is. He is walking, talking evidence of who Jesus is. And he becomes the lightning rod of this controversy. And then they do what? We can't decide. So let's ask the blind man. So what do you think? He's sitting there hearing all this. And what does he say? How does he respond when they ask him? Well, what do you think? He's a prophet. That's a safe answer, right? He's a prophet. That's a very safe answer. And the Jews then did not believe it of him. Why is that? Why aren't they going to believe this guy? Now remember, the Pharisees are separatists. They keep away from everything that's unclean. And later on, they kind of begin to talk about him, and they really show how they feel about this individual. He's just this sinner. We're not going to listen to anything he says. But they sort of had to ask because he was there. I mean, when it happened, he was a credible witness, at least until they kind of just push him out. And so they don't believe him. So what do you do? I don't believe what you're saying, so we're going to do what? Let's call in another witness. Who do we call in? We call in the parents, right? They call in the parents. Don't you hate that when people call your parents? Especially when you're a grown man. I'm a grown man, right? But they called my parents in. Parents are before the principal kind of scenario, and they begin to ask the questions. Is this your son? Was he born blind? How is he healed? Right? They want to know what's happening. And how do the parents answer? Yeah, so they said, yeah, this is our son, and yes, he was blind, but how he's healed, you know, he's old enough, let him talk. This is an old bus that gets ran over. This blind man, he gets thrown under the bus by his parents. Now, why are his parents so hesitant to say anything about the healing of their son? What does the text say? That they were afraid of what? Getting thrown out of the synagogue. Now, it does not mean that they will take you up by your robe and throw you out of the synagogue. Kind of, it's not a physical throwing out, although they probably wouldn't put it past them. What we're talking about when you get thrown out of the synagogue is you are dead to the synagogue. That group, you are no longer part of it. Now, there's various levels of that. There's some that are just sort of, you know, for a time, so you'll learn your lesson, and then those kind of things. But this is a throwing out. You are no longer part of this group. You are ostracized from us. You are cut off. That's what they're afraid of. You no longer get to hang out with your friends. You can't eat with them anymore. Any kind of work connections you had with the Sanhedrin are dried up. You're done. So because of that pressure they put on them, they said, well, let's let him answer. Just let him answer. They don't stand up for what's going on. And so they do what again? They question him again. Now, when they question you again this time, what's your attitude now? When they question him this time, what's your attitude? They call him in a second time, and they say this kind of phrase to kind of prime his answers. Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. Have you ever been in a situation where you know the answer people want you to say, but you can't say it? I know what you want me to say. I know what is accepted to say in this scenario. I know what everybody would make everybody happy and make my life easy if I said this. Is he going to do that? Is he going to take the easy path? No. What do you see in this man as he's going through this? You see shorter answers turning into longer answers. You're seeing, well, he's a prophet turning into something more. Right, you see that kind of growing, and I don't know if it's just his, I'm done with you guys kind of attitude, but you see that growing in his response, right? When he answered, he said, whether he's a sinner, I don't know. One thing I know is that I was blind and I see. Here's honest, here's an honest heart seeing what took place, right? Give God the glory, this is what you're supposed to say, but here's an honest heart looking at the evidence. I don't know what you guys are trying to get, but here's what I know took place. Have you ever been in a situation where there's this storm around you, people opining about your life, and you're saying, well, I don't know what you know, but this is what I know took place. This is what I know is happening. This is what I know I must do. And so this blind man begins to do that. We see this kind of coached answer that they're trying to get out of him. So they said to him, what did he do to you? They ask him again. Like, he hasn't heard it. They haven't heard this before. Right? He's tired of answering. They're trying to coach this answer out of him. And he answers, he said, I told you already and you didn't listen. Who just told them that? Jesus has been saying this forever. And Jesus is like, yeah, I know. I feel your pain on talking to these individuals about what is just truth. It's like you're hitting your head against the wall just trying to get truth across to people. Well, that's just your truth. I don't know about that. And so you're trying to talk to people about truth. Have you tried that? Is that an easy conversation? Because apparently there's multiple universes now, and there's truths for everybody. It's difficult to talk about just what is truth. And so he's coming up against that problem here. And he said, I told you already, you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? You do not want to become his disciples too, do you? Whoa. He didn't go just from like, you know, I'll answer the questions as per teacher's teaching, right? He went beyond that and just kind of poked it. He poked at them, didn't he? He stirred the pot about what they really felt. And this kind of response, like, who are you to tell us that, right? Well, how do they respond to that? He said, oh, well, you know what? You're right. We should have just been listening. Is that how they respond? They have a whole posture, right? For them to bend even an inch, to give any ground to a sinner, to give any ground to this man who was always a sinner from his birth, would bring down their house of cards. They can't move. They reviled him and said, you are a disciple, but we are disciples of Moses, right? And what had Jesus already been talking to them? If you were disciples of Abraham, if you were disciples of Moses, then do the things that Moses and Abraham have done. Do those things. This blind sinner in their eyes was doing what Moses and Abraham was doing. They were doing nothing. So he answers them again and defends himself. I love this. This is almost like if you wanted a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, like a New Testament example, that's what this is right here. Sort of this individual. This is a David and Goliath. This is a man who is nothing. Nothing in society. Talking to these, you know, big Pharisees who are just all the pious people and all the popular people. And so he says to them, well, here is an amazing thing. I love how he opens this. It's so awesome. Here is an amazing thing, that you do not know where he is from, yet he opened my eyes. Like, this is so obvious. You should know this. We know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is God-fearing and does his will, he hears him. Since the beginning of time, it has never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a person born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Here's this man going toe-to-toe with, according to society, these people, just with the truth, just with the evidence. And this is what, he is not the first person, even in the Gospel of John, to say this. This was said earlier about Jesus. If he's from God, he could have done nothing. And then later on, what does Gamaliel say? This is going to come to nothing if it's not from God. This is wisdom saying this. And they're not going to hear it because of who he is. And so they just throw the same old cliche at him. You were born entirely in sins and you are teaching us. So they throw him out. They throw him out. If you were to look over in Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. Verses 22 and 23. They're kind of doing him a favor. A little bit here, right? They're kind of doing him a favor. Luke chapter 6, 22 and 23. Blessed are you when men hate you and ostracize you and insult you and scorn you, scorn your name as evil for the sake of the Son of Man. Be glad in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the same day, in the same way, their fathers all used to treat the prophets. This blind man is on parallel with whom at this point? With the prophets of old. He's speaking truth. Now, I'm not saying he is a prophet, but he's speaking truth to people who are stiff-necked and hard-headed and will not listen. And Jesus says that if you're doing those things and they ostracize you, they did the same thing to the prophets. They've done the same thing. This is their MO. And this blind man, who was nothing, was thrown out. You were thrown out of the synagogue. Is that the end of the story? It's not. Jesus hears word. We don't know how, but Jesus heard that they had put him out. Well, I hope, and we'll be praying for him. I'm not negating that praying for people, obviously, but did he do more than just word service to this individual? What did he do when he found out that he was thrown out? Went and found him, which is probably no small task, right? I mean, he's God. He could probably know where he is. But if you're just a human trying to find somebody in a large city like that, it takes effort to go find this individual. And they found him. And he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" Is this an important question? Some of you, your lives have been changed because of how you answered this question. Do you believe in the Son of Man? He answered, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" He's seeing God face to face. He hadn't seen him yet. He doesn't know what Jesus looks like, right? Who is he? He said, "You have both seen him, and he is the one who was talking." How does he respond to Jesus when he finds out that he's face to face with the one who healed him? "Lord, I believe," and he worships. Jesus has probably not had a great day. You know, people are trying to throw rocks at him. And this guy obviously was highs and lows today, right? You guys went through your best day ever. You got healed. You can see now. And then people throw you under the bus. Your own parents throw you under the bus. And you're thrown out of the synagogue. And you're by yourself because nobody wants to be around the man who's been thrown out. But this random guy asked you this question. And then you find out this is Jesus. This is the Son of Man. This is the Christ. And you worship him. I wonder if in the moment that he healed the blind man, Jesus knew this was going to be taking place. Because please do not, while it's a simple moment, do not overlook the gravity of what's happening in this moment. Man is worshiping God on the Sabbath in this moment. Eyes are completely open. There is no pretext. Everything is laid bare. He's worshiping God face to face. Sorry, I didn't eat breakfast. Blood sugar's low. So anyway, he's worshiping God face to face, right? And this morning, you're about to worship God. You don't get to worshiping face to face, but you get to worship God. And as we look at what took place here, this is huge. This is what could he have done maybe more? Jesus done more to try and convince the Sanhedrin? His biggest win this day was this blind man that nobody wanted, nobody cared about, right? His biggest win was us. You know, there were people who got to see him. And in Luke and John chapter 12, blessed are those who believe and haven't seen. He had the same faith we do. He never got to see Jesus, but he believed. He had the same faith we do. We walk by faith, not by sight. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 7. So in conclusion, I think we have time. More time than I thought. When you were washed, you could see. Were you ever washed? Was your life ever changed? What took place in that change? Did your life change? Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 6. These people's lives changed. This blind man, your life changed, right? And if you start in verse 9, there's this whole list of people, sinners that will not inherit the kingdom of God. None of them are nice. They're the big sins, right? The big ones. In verse 11, he says what? To this church, this group of Christians in Corinth, what does he say? And such were some of you. Here's this church. When you go to church, you go to church with all these people that never sin, that never had any issues, that just, you know, they put on their tie in the morning, even though their dad makes them put it on, but they put on a tie in the morning and they go to worship, and they're just these perfect people that have never sinned. Is that what this text says? No. Not at all. Such were some of you, but you were washed, you were sanctified, but you were justified in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ and in the Spirit of our God. That blind man was told to wash. Go wash. Now, it was his blindness that he was getting rid of, but when we understood the gospel, were our eyes opened to things that we didn't understand before? Have your eyes continued as you continue to learn about who Christ is, and you continue to learn about your relationship with Him, and you continue to learn about all the things God has done to make this event possible, that we as people can stand here and worship God this day? Do your eyes continue to be open? Continue to be understanding more? What about your relationship with other people? And as we look at defending your faith, and you've made changes, you've probably had to defend some of those changes. People may have said, well, you've changed. Something about you, you've changed. Did you cut your hair? Did you dye? What changed about you? You've made an inward change, and that begins to be seen outwardly, right? And over in John chapter 20, John highlights John chapter 20. We have doubting Thomas, which kind of gets a bad rap, Thomas, for that. He just wondered what all the other disciples had already had. So I want it too. So, but Jesus appears to him, and Jesus said to him, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are they who did not see, but yet believed. Again, we're in the same situation as that blind. We haven't seen Jesus at any time, but we believe. We continue to defend the faith, defend earnestly the faith, defend our changes to those who are around us. Have you ever been thrown under the bus because of your faith? Well, let him answer. Let this guy answer. Have you been ostracized from certain groups because of your faith? Well, we can't hang out with that guy because he's always trying to do the good thing, and we don't want to do the right thing all the time. So let's just, you know, ostracize that person because it's uncomfortable to be around a Christian sometimes. Why is it uncomfortable to be around a Christian? We are supposed to be children of God, children of light, and light does not, or the darkness does not like the light because it shines light on just the ugliness of sin, and so that's why it's uncomfortable. So when people are saying, well, it's uncomfortable to be around you, you say, good. Maybe you should change, right? That's good. I'm not saying being a jerk, but there's a way to do it, right? There's a way to do it. So are we ever going to see him face to face? Are we ever going to see him face to face? That day is coming. And some of you are saying, not soon enough. We should all be saying that. Look over in Revelation chapter 7. Revelation chapter 7, beginning of verse 15. For this reason they are before the throne of God, and they serve Him day and night in His temple. And He who sits on the throne will spread His tabernacle over them, and they will hunger no more, no longer, nor thirst any more, nor will the sun beat down on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb is in the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and will guide them to the springs of water of life. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. We will be with the shepherd. Jesus the shepherd went and found the blind man and said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And helped him understand what he was fighting for. Christ has done the same thing. He's provided everything that we need to be able to fight for what we believe in and stand up for our faith and be a light. Is it going to be fun? No. Or is it going to be easy? No. But if it was easy, anybody could do it. We have been given everything that we need for that, so that we can be with the shepherd, be with the Lamb, and worship Him. This morning you're going to worship God, and we'll bow prostrate before Him. But one day we'll worship face to face. Thank you for your time this morning in class.